Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Consciousness Shift. Tonight we have a great big pleasure to have Danian Brinkley with us. Danian is probably most people realize him as the gentleman who is the star of the story of Saved by the Light. He's been through the original near-death experience. Danian, are you with me?
I am here, Gwen, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's myself and you. We usually have Nicole. I think she'll call in. I wanted to, just to begin with and right off the bat, I wanted to ask you if you would explain that. Well, really, after seeing your video yesterday, I thought it'd be a great place to start by asking you if you could give us just a small capsule for those folks out there who may just be learning about you. I don't think there are many, but just a little introduction and then speak about what we were speaking of just before we went on air. Is that good?
Yeah, sure. I have no problem, Gwen. My name is Danian Brinkley. I'm an old man. I'm 63 years old. In 1975, I was struck by lightning, September the 17th. But before September the 17th, I was basically just a jerk, just a redneck from deep in the South who really had no consciousness and no spiritual inclination. I grew up in fundamentalist South Carolina, and everybody goes to hell where I come from. And so I thought that that's where my destiny was. And I thought that being a tough guy, you know, you knock them out first before you have a conversation. And so I played sports, and then I discovered the United States Marine Corps. And I thought I'd found complete contentment and happiness, because the more things you destroyed, the better everybody liked you. Uh-huh. And so one day in 1975, when I was all full of myself, I was talking on the telephone, and the phone lightning hit the phone line. It went in the side of my head, and it went down my spine, and it welded the nails of the shoes I had on in the heels to the nails in the floor, which grounded me, threw me in the air out of the shoes, and suspended me in the air and slammed me back down on the bed. In this world, I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. It took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. And in the course of that, after being struck by lightning, it was like drinking battery acid, Gwen. I was burning and on fire, and the flash of the ball of light that came through the room when the lightning discharge came, it burnt my eyes. So I not only was paralyzed, I was not only like covered in battery acid, I couldn't see. And I had to wear welder's glasses for almost 2 years. I couldn't take bright lights because of what it had done to my pupils. But in the course of that, all of a sudden, in immense pain, I lift up out of my body. I had no pain. Mm-hmm. I was more comfortable in this place than I'd ever seen, and I could see. And as I looked down, I could see myself lying across the bed. I could hear my girlfriend saying, wow, that lightning struck really close. And I thought, yeah, no kidding. And she came down the hall, and she'd taken a course in cardiopulmonary resuscitation. She began to pound on my chest and breathe in my mouth and clear my throat and clear my tongue and that kind of stuff. And as I watched this, it was just like watching it on television. I was no longer connected to the physical, mental reality that we call this place. And I was an observer. And quite a casual observer. You know, it was like whatever was going on did not matter. And the place that I was more comfortable and more wonderful than any place I'd seen. They moved me to the ambulance, and I figured I better go with the stiff. And the the paramedic was working on us and on me, and he said, "He's gone, he's gone." And I look over the paramedic's shoulder at myself, thinking that I always thought I was better looking than that. And then this tunnel begins to form. I hear this series of chimes, and I move down that tunnel, and I come through this tunnel into a place of bright, brilliant light, beautiful. And it didn't hurt my eyes either. And I had what was a classic near-death experience. And in the course of that classic near-death experience, I understand that there is not only life after death, but that this life is a gift. It is a rare privilege to be able to breathe. And this is, I think, the only planet or the only dimension where breath becomes so important. And so once I had that experience and I got a chance to see the multidimensional worlds of what we would call the heavens, because in Genesis it says there are seven heavens, I can guarantee you for sure there are four. And I began to explore and to look at this place, and I went to these crystal cities and this place, you know, it says, in Jesus said, "In my Father's house there are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you. And if this was not so, why would I say it?" Well, it's so. I went to one of these crystal cities, and I met these spiritual beings, and the only way you can describe them is words like honor and heroism and integrity and glory and wonderment. Wow. And I began to see that there was a purpose and a meaning for my life and why I was there, that I had to, when I came back, which they didn't exactly tell me in the beginning, but when I came back, that there was a course of action that I would take that would somehow affect the world. I didn't realize it would be where I am today, some 38 years later, but I've never moved from the mission, and I have stayed the course based on having the single most important thing. Everybody who's listening tonight must or this afternoon or tonight must understand this without any question. There will come a point in your transition from this world to the next that you will see everything that ever happened in your life from the moment you were born, a panoramic life review of every event that ever happened. I know it seems scary or a little odd to most people to understand that the world that you breathe in is completely different from the world that you breathe out. And that you measure the world breathing in, and then you measure the world breathing out, and you have no idea the dramatic changes that takes place in reality based on the difference between whether you're breathing in and you're breathing out. Then you watch it from a second-person point of view as though you were your own best friend. And you look at the choices that you made, Gwen, and everybody decides here on this side of the veil that it was a right choice or a wrong choice. That's nonsense. What you do is you make choices to see how close you can get to where you wanted to go. What sometimes is considered the absolute stupidest thing that you've ever done becomes the rightest move that you've ever could have done, like that song, "God Bless This Broken Road That Brought You Back Home to Me." You think you made a mistake when it was just what it took to change a direction to take you to a better place. And so many people don't realize that because they're always condemning themselves of made a mistake or an error. Then once that happens, you literally become every person that you've ever encountered. And you feel the direct results of your interaction between you and every person that you've ever encountered. You literally become every person. What is so dramatically amazing about that? If I discovered that growing up as a bully, it was only me I was hitting in the face. It was only me that I was shooting. It was only me that I was intimidating and humiliating. Because we are each other. And it teaches you about the connectedness. And that moment was the most dramatic change before I had step four, which is the system of judgment. Now, keep in mind, Gwen, I've been through this three times.
Whoa.
Over a 22-year period. So I'm telling people this is how it happens, everybody, and you can do whatever you want to do, but nonetheless, this will be the measurement of what happens when you have your panoramic life review. Judgment. Who judges you? You do. Who is the greatest? Who knows the most about you? You do. So you are the judge. And what is the measurement of that judge? Unless I'm going to use a Danianism, let's say God. If God could not come today and God sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? And then you run back through your life. And that's the measurement. Well, for me, the near-death experience was painful. But for spiritually, it was the revelation, like revelation of what life is about. What is this opportunity? And that I had been granted the privilege to be the difference that God made, and I know that I'm going to be every person that I ever encounter. And that was what changed me. And what I tried to do in writing Saved by the Light, At Peace in the Light, and The Secrets of the Light with Catherine and myself, and this new book, 10 Things to Know Before You Go, I tried to be able to create and drive that home so people can live their life without all that fear of being guilty of the original sin. What nonsense. It's utter absolute absurdity. And that all of a sudden it's about that every breath is a difference, is a chance to make a difference, and every breath is a brand new world. And that if you're going to be everybody you've ever encountered and feel the direct results, I thought to myself, well, what could I do? So I decided to become a hospice volunteer. So I could be at the bedside of those who were afraid, who didn't know what I knew. And as they made their transition from this world to the next, that it would be me that represented the divine, that could help safely with comfort and ease, help them cross that veil. And then second, someone who could talk to the family, and someone who could give them consolation and solace based on that they would see them again. A lot of times people ask me, Gwen, well, do you tell people about the near-death experience? Is that what you do? Maybe one out of 40. Mm-hmm. I never bring the near-death experience up unless they do. And since I spend a lot of time with veterans, I probably hear about the battlefield visions and being wounded, being choppered out, and having their brothers or their mothers or their deceased grandmothers come to them. And I've heard so many stories of being in battlefields and seeing soldiers in spirit right along with them. You know, and so it's pretty amazing to understand. So if God couldn't come today and God sent me, in the life I just reviewed, what difference did me and God make? We were at the bedside. We gave comfort and courage and strength for those who are trying to deal with letting go in a world that's basically either filled with sin, or it's completely unknown, or there is nothing.
And you have a whole group that's incredible work that you're doing. You have a whole Twilight Brigade. Can you tell us a little bit about it, Danny?
Well, what I did was one person wasn't enough. You know, one person wasn't enough. Just me wasn't enough. And I was looking at the volunteers, and I realized none of them had a skill set necessary to be able to bring the kind of comfort that most veterans, especially combat-related, since I'm a former Marine, you know, maybe not much of one, but I'm still one, and that most people don't know how to handle what combat is and what veterans go through, because they've never killed children and women and never seen what napalm does in a village, and they've never been in a firefight, you know, those kinds of mindsets. So yeah. I decided that I would went with a group of friends, and I helped co-create the Twilight Brigade, which is one of the largest end-of-life care volunteer programs for dying veterans. And I said that no one need dies alone. And everybody, Gwen, needs a unique skill set when you're going to deal with it, because to become a hospice volunteer, a caregiver, you have to be brave enough to face your greatest fear, which is what we now call death or the unknown.
Right.
Okay, and so since this is the statistic, the largest expansion of human growth in Western history, in the history of the Western countries, was the baby boomers, people born between 1945 and 1967. So
yeah.
go back to the 20s, let's say 1928 or 29, so because we have people who lived a lot longer than they're supposed to, then if you take that group of people and you look at them, for baby boomers, 10,000 turn 65 every day.
That's amazing.
That means in the next 12 years, some 70 million Americans, let's say the next 14 years, some 70 million Americans will go from this world to the next. And when you look at that, that is the largest, and people call it die-off, but that is the largest group of transitioning people in Western consciousness. Then when you take into consideration that 70 cents of every dollar in health care is spent in the last 6 months of life to extend life an average of 16 days, what you have is a mess, Gwen.
Yes.
What you have, if you have 70 cents of every penny spent in health care, and based on the Affordable Care Act, where do you think the monies are going to be cut? Based on where we are as a nation, we are supposedly $17 trillion in debt. We're really $56 trillion in debt. So as this new healthcare paradigm comes into play, where do you think we're now facing? So I decided I needed to create an organization that I could give this specific skill set and take people through a training that would give them the confidence that as they were at the bedside of people who were going from this world to the next, that they could grow in insight and confidence about their spiritual identity as opposed to fear and loss and fright about their mental physical identity. And that's what brought the Twilight Brigade. You know, everything about me is on Danion.com, Danion.com, or thetwilightbrigade.com or .org. I always laugh, Gwen, and say I have a split personality, but both of them are public. You know, both of them, you know. I have Danion, the insane madman, and then I have the Twilight Brigade, which is I deal with the Veterans Administration and Congress and Senate oversight and Veterans Affairs and legislative positions and support. No, I mean, I have two complete different personalities.
Well, you're doing an amazing job in both. What you describe is a much needed resource for people, especially with the numbers you give, but every day people face a great, great fear that they needn't face, and to have anyone around that they can, that, and you've said several times as you've been describing this, to give people the confidence to sit by other people at their bedside as they're transitioning. Give them the confidence. That's the word, because it does take a confidence to sit down and honestly tell somebody, this is not the end. These are not your eyes closing. That's worlds of comfort. I know.
And think of this, Gwen. Everybody's going to be a hospice volunteer sooner or later.
You got it.
Sooner or later, if it's just for yourself, if there's anybody you've ever loved or anyone who's ever loved you, inevitability is that you came to this world and you will be leaving this world. And, I mean, that's what the new book, Catherine and I, that's what the new book, 10 Things to Know Before You Go, aspire to inspire before you expire. I'm tired of dying. I've died so many times and so much, it's just enough. Now let's focus on living and taking the skill sets and the perspective that's gained from 22 years of going, having three near-death experiences, struck by lightning, open-heart surgery, and brain surgery. All are side effects from being struck by the lightning. Right. Being 35 years a hospice volunteer, been at the bedside of 2,000 people going from this world to the next. My youngest was 8, my oldest was 105, and being with 423 people when they took their last breath. When you combine that amount of knowledge and having more than 30,000 hours registered at the bedside with the VA system, 30,000 hours, if you combine all of that into a perspective, there wouldn't be very much I did not know about the process, how it works medically, medicinally, spiritually, emotionally, pharmaceutically, and looking at how insurance is being rated and paid, and looking right. what people think about death and end-of-life care and the absolute total fear and horror we have of quote-unquote death. But we've now merged that into pain that is inflicted on people who are so afraid of dying, they will allow the advancements of science and chemistry to torture them to transition. I don't like the word death because it never happens, but to torture them into transition. There's not enough dragon's blood being sprayed around the universe, Gwen.
You are testifying. I was amazed at something I heard you say on video. You said you've never left heaven. And
well, what?
It was a little thunderclap, or hell. And I all of what you're saying comes to bear, and what you give them when you let them know and you explain to them that you've really never left heaven. That's, Danny, and that's incredibly brilliant, like a jewel. It shines. And folks, once again, the confidence to sit down with someone and they understand, they realize that you're speaking the truth to them, the great comfort that it brings. And yet, as you say, what we're facing right now with, what is this? You are someone who slips in between worlds very quickly and formlessly. We're faced right now with not just, you know, there is a great transition of species and planet going on. And it's not just people who are crossing over, I think. I think that a whole way of thinking, that old paradigm shift is about to happen. And we were
speaking. We're there.
Yeah.
We're there. And it's on every level. I mean, if you look at what the Maya, I live in a comfort zone, smart enough to plan ahead because mm-hmm. I believe what I learned about myself to have value. I may not have been perfect in it because, you know, I'm not flawless yet, and I still have those kinds of days when I would rather prefer to knock them out than listen, but I've still learned to listen. Mm-hmm. But we are in the midst of a tremendous paradigm shift. The Maya said the galactic age, which is a 5,125-year period, ends, and then the new age, which is called the universal age, which is the next 5,125-year period, there's a 400-day period in between. We're in that 400 days. It began December the 21st, 2012. It ends probably in middle of January 2014.
And what
happens is the conscious universal shift, how you realign yourself, now the massive solar flares that we're watching, the destruction of electromagnetic fields, the severity of tornadoes, and look at Hurricane Sandy. It wasn't a hurricane, but for about 2 hours.
Right.
Okay, and it went from the Atlantic Ocean all the way across the northern states from New Jersey all the way to the Great Lakes during billions and billions of dollars worth of damage. We look at our monetary system. America has collapsed. The world economy based on fiat currency has completely collapsed.
Yes,
so what's got to happen? I will estimate it'll be sometime in October. that a new currency will be introduced, not a Federal Reserve debt bill. You know, we get Federal Reserve. Anytime you hand someone a dollar bill to pay for something, you are declaring yourself a dollar in debt. Every time you buy something based on the Federal Reserve note, you're saying, okay, I now owe $10. I owe $9.63. So I would say that what would have to, not sure about this, but this is me estimating transition and shift, we would see a movement of where the Federal Reserve as a central bank would merge with or become a part of the United States Treasury. That means the Federal Reserve, a privately owned banking system that controls our economy, would move itself into the federal government. Heretofore, the Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the government. When it aligns itself with the federal, with the Treasury Department, that means they could issue a new currency called a Treasury note, which would have to be backed by gold or silver or oil. It must have a commodity, because the paper fiat currency, which is based on this, it's called fractal. That means for every dollar you have in the bank, a bank can loan $99.
Isn't that wonderful?
And so that's what's happened. So that would have to change from the basic level of cosmic shift. If that happens, then everything that we're talking about now is far greater and far more magnificent and far more cosmic. But look, the world that you and I were born in, the country that we were born in, disappeared in 2008. A lot of people still think they live in the United States of America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, but they never read the Patriot Act. They've never read the National Defense Authorization Act. They never read the Affordable Health Care Bill. If you look at the Affordable Health Care Bill, what it says is this. It says that all your health care is going to be provided by programs designed by the government, number one. Number two, it's going to be administrated through the Internal Revenue Service, and all the files have to go through Homeland Security. So what you're doing is your entire health care is going to depend on the government. It's going to be checked by Homeland Security so that you can be checked to see if you really are American or if you're a terrorist. And then the Internal Revenue Service is going to determine what you owe. So your income, your health care, and your security of identifying you is all going to be housed under the United States government. Well, they had a name for that. They had a name for that in the 1850s and 60s. It was called the plantation.
Yeah.
And the government will no longer work for us. We will work for the government.
Yeah.
And people who are not realizing that that's the change we're about to see, and the devaluation of the United States currency, which would happen in October, November, or December, I would say we would see signs of it by August. Anybody who's not paying attention to that has deluded themselves into understanding that we are living in a paradigm shift. Okay? Mm-hmm. And as we live it...
Go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
And as we live in that paradigm shift, it's exciting times.
It is.
It's not something to be afraid of. It's something that you have to please understand that you chose and were chosen to live at this particular time in this unique period of time, because you were the one that the divine believes could make the greatest difference.
There you go. It is a choice, isn't it? Danny, and with everything that is shifting, and I want to welcome Nicole in. Nick, I saw that you got in, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, yeah. I muted myself because I've just been sitting here going, wow, and nodding, and with everything that you've said. It's really, it's such a pleasure to hear someone just break it all down. I mean, you really broke it all down. It's great. Please continue. Nice to meet you.
Pleasure is mine, Nicole. Nice to have you. Did you get safely moved?
Yeah, I just came back from a trip to Boston, so just in time to hear your story. I'm so happy. Yeah.
Good.
Go on, please.
So, Danny, as we progress in this 400 days, what can people do, people who are waking up to this, who are aware? I know myself, I've become as much political activist as I have spiritual activist for all of these years. It goes hand in hand. You look at someone like Miriam, like Starhawk, she's out there teaching permaculture to a complete community. It's up to us to walk out into the community and to be a part of a greater community so that we can bring some comfort to people on all issues, all topics that are going on right now.
Well, it's very easy. Clean out your closet. Go into your closet, because I'm going to do this weekend again. Clean out your closet. And take what you're not using yourself. If it's a female, take it to a women's shelter. Okay, don't take it to the Salvation Army. Take it to somebody you can watch put it on. Clean out your closet. Refresh yourself. Take what you're not using and put it in the hands of someone who could use it. And this is what has to happen. Okay, because if we don't understand what duality is, you know, male and female, light and dark, good and evil, all that stuff, then we are losing the context. I get up in the morning because I have to go to work just like everybody else. Just because I've been dead, there's no free lunch. I sold an awful lot of books, but that helps fund the Twilight Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
But when I wake up in the morning and I look at my old self in the mirror, I realize I got up for two reasons. First, because I got up today, a veteran won't die alone somewhere in America. And second, I have to live in this mental, physical world with the joy of not having most of the fears everybody else has. I don't live with the basic fears. I've been through enough and understand enough about pain and have dealt with it for years, so that what scares most people is the fact that the desperation that's surrounding the economics of the life that we've given. It's so funny when you start to realize that we gave up the greatest industrial base in the world, the greatest manufacturing industrial free enterprise system in the world. We gave it up, shipped it overseas, so we could buy cheap stuff on credit. When you start to realize that that's what we've done, we're all crazy. And there has to be a modification of that insanity. And you kind of start with your spiritual self. Think of this, Gwen and Nick. Let's say we're a great nation. Well, let's look at homeless. Homeless in the veteran population, which is 10% of the population of the United States are veterans, a little under 10%, about 9.4%. There are 44% of the homeless.
Wow.
20% of the homeless are children 14 and under. And one in four children in America goes to sleep hungry. That is evil.
Agreed.
And if we don't stop as a nation and quit whining and collectively come together to engage our political establishment, who has completely failed to represent us, and we don't engage that and realize that what they're fighting about is some fool nominated for something somewhere, and we are not feeding children, and we are not allowing this to happen, and we have veterans who fought in wars who come home to no job, who come home to can't get service or help from the VA, and they're living on the street because they gave up everything they had to go and defend us. That's a country that deserves to. That's a country that deserves to collapse, and it's surely going to happen.
Yes, sir.
And I think that that's exciting because I'm feeding the homeless. I'm feeding homeless. I'm feeding children, and I'm at the bedside of dying veterans. And it isn't becoming a part about a global community that matters. It's about taking the initiative to do something on your own. And I said, start with cleaning out your closet and go give those to people, because I have so much crap that I can go down on the street corner where the homeless veterans are and I can dress them. And in the Twilight Brigade, we have a room full of clothes that if you're going out to get a job at the VA where we are, if you're going out to get a job, we can get you a haircut, we can get you clean shaven, we can help you do your resume, we can get you going through all those clothes that we have, and we can dress you, and we can send you out for that job interview. And I get such a pride of that. And all that is free because you cared enough to be straight, sober, and willing to find this job. This is the little tiny things that make my world ecstatic, and having the most beautiful, loving, wonderful wife in the world.
She's pretty great. I have to say that what you're saying is that acting locally, just at your own doorstep, going out and making the difference is the place to begin and the place to hold the light, right?
We have hungry children walking the streets.
Yeah.
We have hungry children living in the streets. What in the world happened to us, America? What's happened to us? We've all gone crazy. And we've allowed this to happen before our very eyes because we need to rationalize terror. Do you realize that we went to war in Iraq? We went to war in Iraq, everybody. It killed 120,000 to 500,000 people, and it cost the United States $800 billion. And they've already proven that $56 billion of that money was wasted or stolen.
Right.
And we have hungry children and veterans living on the streets, starving to death in this country. Give me a break.
It's atrocious. It's atrocious that we would put not just that we go to war, it's become our gross national product, war has.
Mm-hmm.
And those who go to fight for the country come back and their homes are taken, their families are broken up, and it's not just the homeless within the military ranks, Danny. It's the people who will no longer live. They take their own lives. There's too much of that in vets.
That's two a day. Two a day active duty.
Yes.
And probably 30 a month veterans. And think of this. 70% of all weapons sold in the world last year was American made.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's our.
We are warmongers.
Yes, sir. There you go. Yes. And a lot of folks, and I'm one of them, would tend to think, in waking up to all of this, that the reason for war is to keep the perpetual machine going that feeds what? Well, it feeds greed. It feeds greed. People are making money on it.
It's what Eisenhower said, beware of the industrial military complex, because to perpetuate, that was in 1960, and look at what we're doing. We're in five wars today.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's pretty amazing as a country built on on a spiritualistic factor and how it's been so degraded and how we've allowed it to happen. Me, I'm pretty ashamed of myself, but I'm trying to make up for that, but it's not so much I can make up for it. But I've had enough panoramic life reviews to be a realist and to look at what people say and what they rationalize. But it hasn't got to be some global movement. It has to do with cleaning out your closet and taking that down and help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all it takes. You know, you look at the kind of personalities and natures that's abuse, and you can't understand it because there's no spiritual repercussion for it. I saw this T-shirt the other day, and it said, "God, how can you let what is happening in these schools, like what happened at Sandy Hook, how can you let what's happening to these innocent children happen?" Signed George, and then the answer was, "It was George. I am not allowed in school." Signed God.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
And that's another form of kicking it up too. My God is better than your God becomes the seed of war and has for thousands of years. And isn't it time that we moved on from that?
Well, we sit on the precipice of world war or world peace. And right now it's the Middle East. All this stuff about the airplane that crashed in San Francisco, my heart goes out to those people.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the funniest thing to me. When we were in Afghanistan and Iraq, we were fighting Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
And the Al-Qaeda was killing our men and women in Afghanistan. When we had completely neutralized and destroyed a country called Iraq, and I mean we destroyed it, then we put those same people on airplanes and we took them to Libya. And they went from being called Al-Qaeda to rebels. And we funded them. And we created a war zone in Libya to destroy Gaddafi. Okay? And then they became rebels. Then we took the same people and put them on NATO airplanes and we flew them to Jordan. And we flew them to Turkey. And now they're the same rebel commanders that are leading the rebel assault against Syria. So they've gone from being called Al-Qaeda to rebels, and we're funding them. So if you go back and you look at Al-Qaeda, which means the base, it was invented by the Central Intelligence Agency to recruit fanatical Islamic fighters to fight the Russians alongside of the Mullah Hashatin, which now has been called the Taliban. So who's behind all of that? We are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what gets me, and, you know, I don't mean to get on my soapbox, but I'm 63 years old. I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. And to watch this stuff happen and to realize that most of us know it, but we don't want to look at it. And we don't want to look at it. And we look at national defense, that every conversation, every word typed, said, written is recorded, that you can come in my house, you can take whatever you want and leave and never have to tell me. I don't have anything that would matter to anybody unless they want to read books about religion or they want to look at studies on death. I mean, that's the only thing I have. I don't do anything illegal except pay attention to injustice. But all this is being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Why? So they can cross-reference and data mine. They can build a base of information like we are absolutely 100% fascist. The the international corporations and our government and our security apparatus works hand in hand to create a fascist society, which means where business and government works together. The same as Japan. Fascist.
You know, how in the world do we rise above that? How do we make the difference?
Clean out your closet.
Clean out your closet.
I promise you, Gwen and Nick, look, and this is something that I've learned. I just started out being a little hospice volunteer because living in South Carolina, when I couldn't tell anybody about the near-death experience because nobody had ever heard of it, Raymond had not become famous, Dr. Raymond Moody in his book Life After Life. I was brought to the hospital where Raymond was going to medical school. He wasn't even a doctor then. And I became a hospice volunteer because I saw in my spiritual self that's what I could do, not to become famous, not to sell millions and millions of books, not to become Danyon, infamous Danyon is what I call that, king of the Swami business. I didn't start out to do all that stuff, you know, because if you know me, I'm just a guy. And I don't read my press, and I don't think I'm so important. But I ended up being able to start a book that became a worldwide cult classic because it was honest. And it was looking at what happened to one guy who was the furthest thing from being perfect, who wasn't contemplating his navel in India, who was not taking drugs, wasn't doing any of that. Just one day he was talking on the phone and he went from a poor, stupid, ignorant human being into realizing that he was a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being with dignity, direction, and purpose. And that focused his life to change. And I have had worldwide impact. So when I tell you to clean out your closet, take me at my word. I mean, and begin that because, or fix a cake or do something where call and look in your phone book or look on the internet where there's a women's abuse shelter or a homeless shelter. Take your stuff down there so you can see the people. See the people that you're helping. You don't stick it in some stupid bin somewhere or donate to a United Way. Who cares? Go do it yourself. And then all of a sudden you have begun to change the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Because the difference that God made that day was you showed up.
Mm-hmm. And cleaning out your closet does so much for you. I'm sure anybody that's listening that's cleaned out their closet at any point in their life with that kind of intention, like I'm going to make space for new things to come. I'm going to give this to people that need it. And it keeps that energy moving. And the feeling afterwards is like a cosmic wash or something. I mean, it's amazing how something as small as cleaning out drawers and closets can make you feel so clean spiritually.
For the right reason. For the right intention. My intention to clean my closet out is first because there are people who can wear stuff that won't fit me either because I'm too fat or too skinny. Basically right now it's because I'm a little skinny because I'm tired of being fat. And so I'm cleaning it out because there's someone who can use this. The second reason is I'm a pack rat. And if I don't get in there and clean it out, Catherine will. And what will happen then is I will lose some of the most valuable piles of paper on the hit that's equal to, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls. And so, you know, the two choices that I have is either I do it or she's going to do it for me. Okay, and she'll get our youngest girl, Adriana, and they've done this to me before. I walk into my closet, and all of a sudden the crap that was piled everywhere is hung up. ties are organized, coordination of shirts, coats, and suits. Everything's in order. Things are folded in the drawer, but all my really cool stuff's in the trash can.
Well, you know, paying the piper there.
Well, hey, that's why I'm trying to tell everybody, come on, everybody, everything starts inside your own heart.
Yes.
And if you have a panoramic life review, you realize it has nothing to do with what you're doing. It always has to do with why you're doing it. And if you put a spiritual value first and you hold true it, just like in our book, and if you go on danyan.com, Catherine has written a book called Jewels for the Soul. And what it is just affirmations. I do it every day. Well, I might miss once every 2 months, but every day I read a jewel. And then at the end of the day, I bookmark it. And at the end of the day, when my day's over, because my days are 12-hour days, because I have to run three things, three businesses. And I have to write, and I'm having to finish a new book and a screenplay.
Yeah,
so,
you're doing a screenplay. Whoa.
Well, what I always do is when I write a book, I make a movie.
There you go.
What I do, yeah, you write a book, and then you write the book so that it can be transformed into a screenplay. And if you get really smart, then you write the screenplay along with the book. So at the same time, since Harper One, which publishes the Bible, who publishes my book, is also owned by Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox. So what I do, this is how I do, Harper publishes the book and Fox makes the movies. And I've been successful at that. You know, you can see that Saved by the Light is still the highest rated television movie in history. It's been seen in 60 countries by 100 million people. And I'm still selling a 17-year-old book. If you see it, it's never left the top 1% on Amazon. Then it's still selling because the subject matter never goes out of style. And I'm funny.
You are terrific. And I like I was saying before we went on, watching the video of you at Revelation was it definitely put me in mind of Neil Diamond, his Brother Loves Traveling Salvation Show, because you're not only informing people, but you're doing it with a nice sense of humor that brings the humor, the laughter up, and then you hold them there and bring them the comfort of the truth. And it's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
Well, I'm thankful and I'm proud because I remember things better when it made me laugh than ever if you tried to scare me.
Right.
You know, because I got a little intense. Because I'm obsessive compulsive, and Catherine calls me a high functioning autistic adult because I study statistics. And I'm an information junkie. It doesn't matter if it's got words written on it, and it's in this house. I've read it, and so I'm always looking at statistics, and I look at statistics that we're supposed to be a gracious nation and we're supposed to be a giving nation, and we look at the hunger and what we've allowed to happen, then it just pisses me off. I'm sorry. And I'm trying to do something about it like everybody's supposed to be trying to do something about it, but they're really not. They've got to take care of their own. Well, if you look at that Revelation tape, like you said, you can go up and anyone can look at that, you realize that we're all connected. It's a scientifically proven fact. They call dark matter, I thought that was quite an enlightening name to give God, that we're all connected, and it's called dark matter. And when the CERN, which is in Switzerland, this electron collider, discovered the Higgs boson particle,
right,
a boson, Higgs boson particle, it proved unequivocally that we're all connected. So if we're all connected and we're all a part of each other and everything we're doing is affecting each other, it also proves this: no one's ever left heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so our attitude toward this place that we think to see to be real, the physical world, which, believe it or not, any physicist can prove to you it's not real. Mm-hmm. You might can touch the top of the table, you might can stick your finger in your nose, and you can think that's real. Well, you're only deluding yourself. Science has proven, unequivocally, without question, not only is what you see not real, you are not even here.
Well, now that's the best super string class I've been to in a long while.
Yeah, and I think that that's really funny, because first you got to realize the fact that some part of me's here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some part of me's here. And some part of me created this so that I could believe and study something about it. The Aborigines believe that this is the dream world.
Yeah.
They always, they're the oldest known civilization, and they believe that this is the dream world, and where they go to sleep is the real world, and how they're able to commune and understand and telepathically communicate with each other is because they believe that this is the dream world. And what we need to do as we're cleaning out our closet is realize that we're organizing the dream world.
Ah, that's well said. You said something about if you're not sleeping well, you're not connecting. And I can't remember exactly what you said, Danny.
Well, worrying, what keeps people from sleeping is they've constructed worry, and then they are not having a life review. They're not closing their day with organizing their thoughts. Okay? I go and look and see how close, based on my Jewels for the Soul in Catherine's book, I go and look at my Jewels for the Soul and see how close I stayed to what I set as my intention today, which was that jewel. Then I have a way to organize the end of my day, and then I put it off. I mean, it's done, because then as I go to sleep, I need to rest so that my spiritual self, of wherever it goes in the dream state, can connect, organize, and better put together what I'm going to do when I wake up in the morning. Mostly it's how many people I have to tell I'm sorry for being such a prick, but, you know, what can I tell you?
We all get to that place.
I live there most of the day. You know, I try to be nice. People say, well, Daniel, since you've been dead and you've been through all this and you're so cool and, you know, you're like a swami. I said, what do you really want to do? What would be the thing that you want to be to accomplish? Because I've been, you know, I've been successful at the things that I endeavor in because of the belief system that I use that I go at it. And I said, well, I can tell you something I've never been able to accomplish. I said, well, what is it? I said, being nice all day. If I could just be nice all day one day, I would feel like I would have achieved the ultimate. I said, so far, it's never happened, but one day I'll be nice all day, and I will have fulfilled what I believe is the ultimate vision of my own success. And then I laugh. Because if I'm down to worrying about that, then I'm at the right place to identify myself based on cleaning out my closet, hoping that it'll help me inspire to be nice all day one day. It won't work, but nonetheless, it's something well worth striving for.
Mm-hmm. Kindness is very important. It's the most important thing you can walk out the door with. I agree with that.
And some dragon blood spray. But Gwen, I've had the most fun with that.
You have.
I mean, I looked at those essences when they first came, because people send us stuff, and I don't mean to say crap, but people send me crap from all over the world. Some of it is the stupidest stuff I've ever seen in my life. And then every so often you get a little box and you open it up and it has the coolest stuff. Your essences and the art by which you blend them, the old alchemist way, and you know that kind of stuff. I'll be upstairs studying it and sniffing it and spraying it and looking at it because that stuff excites me. You know, anything that represents an essence. So I wonder why I keep bringing up the dragon's blood because I spray that crap everywhere. And I can sit, and then I walk through the mist and I breathe it and I set an intention. And then I sit down on upstairs in our bedroom. We have a little sitting area or out on our balcony. And I sit out there and I breathe that essence in it. And I let my mind wander and I open up my heart. And I realize that the person who made this, because it's just natural essences, did it for a way at which that I could open my mind and my heart and let them find a connection and explore a realm or a dimension. You know, and I believe that anybody who's listening that's not paying attention to your essences is making a terrible mistake and have become deluded into believing what they think and what they see is more real than what their heart feels.
There you go. Bless you. Thank you.
The only time the truth hurts.
Go ahead, Daniel. Yeah.
No, I'm here. I was saying the only time the truth hurts is if you hide from it too long.
I have a question that I've always wondered about. Now, I know you do readings, personal readings with people. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that has come about since you're all the physical phenomenon? And I know people are interested, Daniel.
Well, what happened was this. I'm empathic. When you know you don't die and you know you're not going to hell, and you know that you are obsessive compulsive, so I'm obsessive compulsive dead or alive. And people say psychic, but it's empathic. I can listen to the tone in a person's voice, like us, like me listening to you two. I only pay attention to the verb. My mind automatically records the words. But what I do is I listen to the tone in a person's voice and the verb. The verb conjugation tells me action and intent. So when I'm out touring, I see thousands and thousands of people in the course of a year all over the world. You know, I travel 6 or 7 countries and all around the United States because I need people not to be afraid. I need people to be empowered. And I need to promote books because that helps fund the Twilight Brigade. And I need people to be able to see me, you know, where they don't have to listen, they can feel me. And so what I began to be amazed about was I pick up so much stuff from people in my audiences, and you can go on YouTube and, I mean, you can see shows where people ask me questions and they can't believe what I know about them from that one question, and you can go look at Unsolved Mysteries when I was solving murders and all of that kind of stuff before I decided I didn't want to be a dead talker to the dead and I didn't want to be a murder solver. Because it just was too much pressure. I'd rather it just be Daniel.
Yeah.
And so I came home once. I came home after picking up a lot of stuff about people who were grieving. And a lot of times I hear people talking, trying to talk to the person that I'm talking to or someone in the audience, and I'm just used to it. And I hear people saying, will we please tell them this or this and that, like just a... Earlier today, just before this, I had a lady, and she called, and it was about her grandmother, and she had questions on her own, and I said, well, excuse me, Val, let me ask you something. Who is Reedy? And she stopped. You know, you could hear that dead silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I have someone here that keeps saying to tell you what to tell Reedy and what she's asking to do. It's an older lady because I can tell by the voice. And I said, it may sound stupid because it was the first thing I said. Well, Reedy was her cousin who had just come down from New York to say his goodbyes to his grandmother who's living with Val, who has Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And she says, how in the world could you come up with Reedy's name? I said, Val, I didn't come up with it. I mean, wasn't me. You can't blame me for that. I just got this old woman talking to me, needing for you to tell, you know, this is how I am. So when I came home one time with Kat, I said, you know, hon, I said, these people, I wish I could talk to them, but it's private. It's their personal stuff, you know, because people ask me all kind of things, and I'm protective of people because everybody doesn't need to know your business. And she said, well, let's start doing readings. I said, well, what is that? She said, well, you can get on the phone. I know how you do. You listen to people's voices, and, you know, I know what can happen. And she said, let's carve out an X amount of time. Let's place a value on it. And I said, but, Kat, I'm too anal retentive. It has to be specific questions. I said, because some people say, well, am I going to get married? Do you see my finances improving? And I said, I don't want to answer to that stuff. I said, what that is that's based on my intention. I said, I need people to have seven questions. If they write down seven questions and they come at me, that means they've taken it out of their mind, they've committed it here into the physical dimension. That means the universe is already working at it. That means I can move through it at lightning speed. I can get these things, solutions done, and I can be specific about it, and it's based on their intention, not mine. So if someone calls and they go through and they pay for their reading and they haven't written those questions down, I won't talk to them. You know, people can't play me. I'm not that way. And I don't need your money. It helps because that's the Twilight Brigade. And I don't have to take away from my job income, you know, what raises and helps the kids and pays for the junk we have. But it's a way that I can, that because someone called me and that they have done their homework, they have their questions, and that gives a reason for why they need that answer. And in turn, a veteran won't die alone. And so it was Kat's idea. At first, I didn't think I could do it. But as I've done this for the last few years, I get such a reward in helping people. It's so rewarding for me when I hang the phone up because they've had their questions, and I get skeptics, and I get people going to prove me wrong. And I don't care. Come get you some. You know, who you think going to scare? And so for me, I need to be able to help people, and Kat came up with this way. And when she came up with it, I see it works, and I carve out time, and I take away from my world, and I carve out time. And somebody who's in trouble or going through issues, or, you know, and whoever knows what those questions are. And I don't want any background, because I have an intellectual side, like we all have an intellectual side, and then we have an empathic side. If you give my intellectual side too much information, that's what it's going to deal with. But if you let my empathic side deal with it, that's some pretty amazing stuff. This lady today, she had her questions. She had five questions. I was ahead of her per question. I stayed one question ahead of her, because once it's out there, and she says, you know, you've answered the first, that you've answered in this one question, you've answered the next two. I said, well, you better think of two more really fast.
Wow. Well, it's, you know, I know people are interested, Danny, it's good to hear, especially how you go about it, because I think that I know several people who read folks for a living, and each person has their own method and with their own integrity. And so when I didn't understand, you know, until I went to the site that you actually did private reading. So it's good to know. And I thank you for giving us this information, because now people can hear just what you require for reading. My goodness.
And I'm hardcore. I can get to the answers. I mean, because I say it like this in all arrogance, but ultimate humility. The universe trusts me. It trusts me. I will not betray it. If I don't get it, I don't care. You can have your money back. I don't care. And I record these. They're recorded. So, and most people I always ask, wait about 2 weeks and go back and listen to it, because you're paying too much attention to me right now to really hear what I'm saying. And I mean, you know, I had people who couldn't get pregnant. I'm here.
Okay.
I had people who couldn't get pregnant who now have like three, you know, they have like three children. I mean, people are having children because I can listen to see what's wrong. Most of it's about chemistry in bodies and people, but if that's their intention and that's their desire, and it's something that they find wrong with them or something like that, and they've written it down, I can find a lot of times. I think I'm 5 for 6 in baby making.
Okay.
Wow, nice.
I have to ask you a question. Do many people who are sensitive to that kind of energy, because you're working with your complete being when you're doing that. From my point of view, you're working with a hookup, as they say, you're hooked into that heavenly connection. In other words, you're working with your complete whole body, all four bodies of consciousness, everything lit up. Do you find that people respond to you or remark to you about an energy about you? I have a reason for asking.
All the time. I mean, people who see me on stage, they tell me about these big beams of light, and you can go on the internet and there's pictures with these gigantic orbs all around me. And then I saw a couple of pictures someone sent a couple of months ago that had this golden hue around me, and I thought it was when I was cracking one of my better jokes. But you see this energy radiate around me. But people, I'm not a guru or anything like that, Gwen.
No,
and Nick,
I didn't mean to imply that either, Danny.
Yeah, I don't play that.
Address it. I wanted to say to you that, you know, when I saw you at Liberty's in Boca Raton so many years ago.
God, you couldn't have been but like 8 years old.
Me either. I was standing at the back of the room, but I have worked with many people, and I've been around folks that are, as my mother would say, gifted. And I have never really quite felt before or since anyone with that large an energy as you had it that evening. It made a large impression on me. I knew who you were when I was coming. I went with, you know, the purpose to see who you were, because I'd read about you and studied you and Dr. Moody, and you made a large impression.
Well, but that's what's passing through me.
Yes,
remember, I forced the four bodies into a plasma. Okay, it becomes, that's a scientific term that I can use, that people can, and it's not plasma like what comes to heal a cut, but a plasma like in a physics term. And then I allow that plasma to gel into a force that becomes a receiver. Because I study my audience in the first couple of minutes, and I will formulate a certain energy by watching the waves of energy, and people call it auric fields. But I can do three or four things in the beginning and watch with the energy to see what affects who in the audience, and then I watch that wave. Then I compress the four powers or the four natures of me into a plasma so that it becomes a receiver. And once I enter that plasmic state of consciousness, then it's half me who has prepared my program, and it's half the collective energetics of the forces that move in another dimension. You know, I won't say another level of consciousness, but it's a dimension, because I change and shift my vibration. So a lot of, and I appreciate that compliment, Gwen. I mean, I just appreciate it, but I can never take credit for that stuff. You know, I can't take credit. I wish I was all that, but because they trust me, and it's so easy. I live among the dying and the dead, so I live in a dimensional reality. And it's so easy for me to cross between those worlds.
What you do is pretty wonderful, because the response I had that evening, my mother had just crossed not very long before. I was grieving pretty.
And what's her name?
I'm sorry?
What's your mother's name?
Gwen. Gwendolyn. She was a senior. And
okay.
You're just being in the presence that evening, the energy that was there, it brought something to the surface, but afterwards, I was comforted, really comforted. And, I don't know how to put it. You know, I'm not a pushover, darling. It was meant to happen, you know, those things that are supposed to be so.
When that time comes, you know, but you don't give me that credit.
No,
I mean, yeah, don't give me that credit. It was that collective group. Do you remember Ruth Montgomery, who wrote Here and the Hereafter, Jean Dickens? She wrote it. She was...
Yes,
like in the 70s and the 80s.
Well, I know.
She was a Washington Post reporter, hardcore investigative reporter. She did an article on Jean Dixon, who was the Washington psychic in the 60s and the 70s.
Yes. Yeah.
And she wrote 12 books that were remarkable. Well, Ruth Montgomery used to write me letters all the time and call me on the phone, and she would tell me things about from Arthur Ford and Lily and the group, which is who she did automatic writing through. She'd sit down and put her fingers on the typewriter. And I have a bunch of letters from her where Lily and the group and Arthur Ford, who was a world-renowned 40s, 50s, and 60s psychic, you know, couldn't be matched. And Lily and the group was the name of the group that moved through her to create the automatic writing to explain the dimensions. She used to write me letters that the Lily and the group would send, would dictate to her. I never knew what to do with that stuff. You know, I'd look at it and read it, and it was pretty wild, the things that they would say about me. And I'd think about that, and I said, whoa, I put it in a box. I kept it in a box. I mean, here I'm going to break out that kind of stuff. But one of the things that she said was that, and this is when Ruth was in her final months, because when she was in her final months, I mean, we would talk like once a week, because she would ask questions, and I would ask her questions, because walk-ins and all this kind of stuff that I had curiosity about, and I would ask her to ask Arthur or Lily and them. And then she sent me this letter, and I took great pride in it, that she said, you know, Daniel, in all the years, what I'm about to tell you, and this is her hand, or typing it, she said, of all the things I've ever heard, what this passage is, and then she typed the passage, and then at the end she said, in all my years of automatic writing from Lily and the group, I have never heard them praise anyone and the success of achieving their goals, not my goals. I've never heard them ever praise anyone higher than what the praise that you have just been given. Well, what am I going to do with that? What am I going to do with that? So I put it in the box. You know, I put it in the box. You know, oh, God, Ruth.
Walk with it.
Well,
it gives me, I understand what you're saying, that you know, spirit moves through you, but you are also the vehicle, and you've got your hands on the wheel. And at the time, it meant a lot to me. But there are folks that know me who know who Danny and Brinkley is, because I'll say, well, you know, the strongest psychic I've ever felt was, guess who? Because that was my experience, the energy in the room. And that's what someone who is working with, you know, the other senses does.
Right.
And often comes about through trauma. I mean, you know, this is what I studied, that used to call it parapsychology. Now they call it psi science, right?
Yeah, frontier sciences, because we've moved into we moved from the chemical stage, physical to chemical, to the quantum stage.
There you go.
I mean, I can explain so much of stuff using quantum theoretical mechanics. And, mm-hmm. I don't really impress me, okay? I mean, I don't impress me, but those skills, once I have a mechanisms, you know, mine aren't, well, let's hope it's going to happen. Write the questions down. You know, move it through the system to where the nature of me, once I hear your voice and I put my earplug in, and I have a ritual. I put an earplug in the ear, I put my ear to the phone, and then I hold my hand over my eyes. You know, and it's kind of silly looking. But from there, I'm just locked in on the tone in that person's voice. And I don't have any problems about whether we all have these gifts.
Right.
We all have reasons for why we've chose not to bring them forward. And then we have all kinds of reasons. It's a sin to be a psychic and all that kind of stuff. Well, who believes all that crap? If I didn't go to hell, all the rest of that stuff went out the window. But mine is a mechanical nature. I don't have that, you know, I'm not weak burning any candles. I do set up a little small altar just in case I'm missing something and I need to reinforce my skill. I have a little altar of things that I set up.
Yeah.
You know, mostly it's a Tibetan salt candle, mm-hmm. and a picture of the world. And then this thing that someone sent me that some alien from the Arcturian galaxy painted for me. You know, I listen to all that stuff, but I like the painting. It looks pretty good. So I thank the Arcturian galaxy for sending me this little scribbling stuff. So I put it there, and if I need to, I focus on it. We all are creating the world that we live in. And we're creating our own world. And I want to create a world that has compassionate courage in it. And I want to create a world that where when someone is down and they need help.
Yeah.
And they need someone to care and someone to listen. I want to be that person. You know, my bedside manner is completely different from my personal manner, because being present and listening. But let me ask you something. Back in the day, God, that was like 1942. What impressed you the most? What was the most impressive about that evening?
I was just learning about working with my chakra system, and I was also just waking up to hearing my own guidance that surrounds me, that I'm connected to, my inner voice, whatever you'd like to see.
Like all of us, sure, yeah.
Yeah. And my base chakra came alive almost to a kundalini kind of strength.
Yeah.
And your first reaction I was, you know, onto my pathway, as they say. I still had a fear, first thing. And then my heart opened up, and it happened in a matter of seconds. And you looked up and across. I was in the back of the room, and you looked directly at me. And then it it just went all comfortable. And in my head, I heard, "It's all right, sweetheart."
Yeah, I could detect those movements in the audience. And see, why I ask you that, Gwen, was this. Because That goes on all the time, but there's most a lot of people are not as gifted as you are because you've now become an alchemist. So your search for the philosopher's stone in your essences and is going to empower people. I mean, I told Kat when I was putting all that stuff on my tongue, she says, you're not supposed to put it on your tongue. I said, don't tell me how to do this. You know, and I put it on my tongue and I sit quietly. And then I can tell its formulation and I can look at it and understand it and see what's in it. I can see what harmonic nature that it operates under. Because I live in that quasar dimensional reality is the normal world I've been living in for 38 years. And so once I saw it, I said, Kat, we need to put this stuff on the website. You know, we need to write up about Gwen and put it on the website and pull this kind of together, because I can't do it under the Twilight Brigade, because that's all government BS and science and blah, blah. But I can put it on Danyan, and then people can go and use it in hospice. You know, mm-hmm. I could put it on Danyan.
Amazing compliment, Danyan. You've made my ear.
That's still the truth, though.
It is.
I went through that little box, you know, because that stuff, those little boxes come about 20 a week, or endorse my book, or read my book, or, say something nice about my stuff. But I look at all that stuff, everything anybody sends me, you know, I look at it, because sooner or later you're going to come across something like what you sent, because I believe that they're out there. And I look at it, and I thought anybody that's not paying attention to your products and what you're doing, they are not really trying to open up using a technique or an essence. We all need things that drive us or inspire us, and fragrances and essences are the key, because the olfactory system is the gateway, and it travels on the nature of the divine, because the divine is represented in air. You can't see it, but you can't go very far without it. And so when they realize it, because she saw me, Kat knows I just blow off stuff. You know, I don't hear all about all that. I don't care. I mean, you know, it's that southern jackass. And but she'll watch me sit down with it. You know, and she's a Danyan observer. She's like I call people Danyan authorities. She's like the ultimate Danyan authority.
Mm-hmm.
And she can tell when it means something to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I get all closed off and give thing a value.
Yeah.
And Danyan, I hate to say this, because I'd love to have more of you. Well, you realize I mean more of you on the Sunday. I know you have an appointment to keep, and we've come to the end of our show with you. I don't want
you.
Well, I hope I haven't bored you girls for this long.
Oh, my gosh.
Not even a little bit.
Say that.
And I sincerely apologize to your audience for messing up their evening.
Oh,
but.
I love this guy.
But I am sincerely thankful that you had the courage and the sense of humor to have me on, and I am thankful.
Oh, Danyan, I hope you come back. We've loved you.
Well, just come to Kat and make it happen, and keep that snake oil coming, girlfriend.
Oh, you got it. You have it.
Awesome. What a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Danyan Brinkley.
Danyan.com. I mean, it's just my first name. Or if you just go on any search engine and type Danyan, just Danyan, and you will find us.
And this October, look for Danyan Catherine's book, 10 Things to Know Before You Go. Really.
Aspire anything. To inspire before you expire.
There you go.
All right, everybody. I love you guys.
Well, love you back.
Love you too.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you. You're welcome. And our best to Catherine tonight.
Well, send her an email and tell her that I wasn't near as boring as you expected me to be. And, you know, tell a lie so that she'll think I was nice through the whole program.
Oh, okay.
And the last thing is clean out your closet, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, love you guys.
Awesome.
Oh,
and I want to say on the closet cleaning, it also helps to have a friend, somebody with a good head on their shoulders. You can go, what do you think? Keep it, don't keep it, keep it, don't keep it. Because you can make yourself a little crazy sometimes. So having another head there is a good thing.
It does work that way. God, he was great, wasn't he? Of course, you know, I've adored him from far for a long time. But
yeah,
I've been
hearing this name
that
for
was
a long
time. Liberty's books was Irin Boca. It's gone now. That was when we had the shop open down in Pompano, and I think that was 96, actually, not 98, 99, but he has, and I've walked into places and shook hands and known a lot of wonderful readers and psychics and, you know, all kinds of folks, but Mr. Brinkley is by far the strongest boom I've ever felt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you walk into the room, you know what's generating all that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have to say, I think a lot of it also is the way that he's so comfortable with himself. Like, he totally gets out of his own way. It was very inspiring to me. Like, the idea of being yourself, just being whoever you are, whatever you are. And it's such a joy.
He was a great show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome.
So I don't know who's on next week, but we'll look somebody up. And I have a question for you, Nick, before we get off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what were you doing?
Therapy?
Boston.
Went to see a really good friend of mine, went to Maine, saw some very mystical, misty Maine actions. That was awesome. Yeah, just a little visit. So wonderful. It was a great time.
Well, good. I'm glad you're back. And I think you're getting actually decent weather up there in New York now.
Yeah.
We're looking at some rain, but it's no longer a hurricane, so...
Nice.
Anyway,
nice.
There we go.
Cleansing. Everybody's cleansing.
Isn't that the truth? So the bywords this week, clean out your closet and don't dump it. Don't take what you have to give to a bin. Take it right down to the people who really can need it and give it to them. So that's a wonderful suggestion because it connects us with the community, and it's a very kind thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I'll tell you, if you're downtown Manhattan, there's a wonderful shelter on Bowery. If you just look up the Bowery Mission, I think it's called, like, really nice people that work there. You see the people right there. They're all hanging out. I've taken a few bags over there, and I'm about to do it again. But a great idea if you're in New York.
There you go. So that's our show for tonight. And thanks, Nick, for being here.
Yeah. Thanks, Gwen. Great. Thank you.
and let's see. I got a little something that we can play off with, a little B. Grimm.
Cool. Let's do that.
Okay. So until next Thursday, this is The Consciousness Shift. Good night, y'all. And thank you, Danny.
I guess I'll donate that to science. And without a brain inside my head, I won't be so defiant, so quiet. Can't you see I'm concentrating? And I don't even want to hear you conversating. I'm still creating lyrical debauchery. And if you only hating, why the hell are you still watching me? You honestly can't believe anything you're sitting off the top. You know I'm copping everything you've ever written. So listen, you couldn't hold these mics, I'm ripping. If I'm like Jordan, you're not even Scottie Pippen. I'm double fisting, done, you only slipping. I'm holding on, gripping, why you slipping? If it's a flash forward, something's missing. I'm blacking out, but I didn't have a vision.
I'm letting you know.
And that's the end of our show this evening. Thank you for listening, and especially those of you who are listening in podcasts or archives. And we want to thank Danny and Brinkley. Thank you so much, Danny, for being with us tonight. That's all she wrote.